This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
So this morning, the session will begin with Dr. Marcia Stefanik, who is a professor of medicine at the Stanford Prevention Research Center and also a member of the Stanford Cancer Research Institute.
Thank you, Amy. When I was asked to do this and they asked about menopause as a window of susceptibility, I felt like, well, maybe it's a window of opportunity. That's how we keep talking about it in the hormone world. And so I wanted to kind of bring that position into perspective. And I'm going to be emphasizing the Women's Health Initiative, which I'm one of the principal investigators for. But what I'd like to start with is to make the point in terms of opportunity. The slide that I put up here for you is one to make the point that when you actually look at the epidemiological data, menopause is something that we kept hearing in the cardiovascular world that women are protected against heart disease until menopause and then they lose protection. But in fact, the epidemiology from study after study shows pretty clearly that in fact, it's a very linear relationship that basically it's just age. There isn't any evidence of a deflection with menopause. On the other hand, when we talk about breast cancer, even though breast cancer is clearly higher in older women, it's a very steep curve in terms of the increase in breast cancer in the premenopausal years. And then menopause shows a very clear time of deflection, and the curve basically flattens out as the endogenous estrogen levels drop. And to just show you, I don't know if you can see here on the bottom, but to just give you another example, we can see this menopausal deflection with something like bone mineral density, where you have in blue on the bottom, this is the drop of bone mineral density in men, very steady. Women have a similar curve for decreasing bone mineral density until menopause, and then there's an accelerated loss, and then it resumes its normal course. So we can see biological changes at menopause in breast cancer and in osteoporosis that we don't see in heart disease. Now, my focus is on hormone therapy, and I don't call it hormone replacement therapy. That was the original way that it was defined back in 1942 when it first became FDA approved. Conjugated equine estrogens, which relates to horses. These are basically extracted from the urine of pregnant horses, was shown to prevent to ameliorate vasomotor symptoms, and that was really one of the most serious concerns for menopause, and that was what it was approved for. And then it was kind of assumed that we need to replace this, and there's a lot of controversy about do we really need to replace hormones. There is that a brief period of time when women have vasomotor symptoms that are uncomfortable. But because of this, and there was a great marketing, a lot of women started going on these hormones, and so we started to develop an observational study database that slowly was giving us associations in the women who were taking them. So the first group of women were women who were worrying about bone fractures. They tended to be thin white women, and so thin white women were the early users, and the early users, then we started seeing breast cancer showing up in the estrogen use in these thin white women, and eventually we started getting other data saying that whereas we had reduced fractures in this group and we had elevated breast cancer in that group, we were getting fewer cardiovascular diseases. These women were thin. They were a slightly different group of women than the general population. And so our observational database was very biased, and it takes a long time to get rid of biases that go into that literature. Nonetheless, what you see in this curve at the bottom is the prescriptions of menopausal hormones were going up very steadily with marketing. A book came out, Feminine Forever, that pretty much marketed the idea that we would stay young and beautiful and sexual and all of these things that weren't proven at all. We had no data to support that whatsoever. But who doesn't want a pill that's going to prevent you from aging? So it was very attractive. And it did increase prescriptions until it was reported in the mid-70s that women who were taking estrogen unopposed were getting cancer of the uterus at very high rates. And that explains that big drop that you see. That is a very scary message for the population. So they came off their hormones. And then the endocrinologist said, well, if we add progestin, we could basically overcome that problem. And as the evidence came to support the idea that we would prevent the endometrial cancer, the cancer of the uterus, women started taking it again. And there's a lot of marketing that was basically putting women back on these hormones. Plus, they do feel better at menopause. Now, there weren't any real randomized clinical trials until 1995. The PEPI study was started focusing on heart disease. And actually not disease, it was risk factors. And then HERS, which was a study of women with heart disease. So we didn't really have a lot of data on estrogen and progestin in particular in the observational literature. Now, this is really a more recent study in the sense that we were already getting plenty of epidemiology that was trying to look at what's that relationship of hormone use to breast cancer. And the Million Women study in 2003, so it was actually right after the Women's Health Initiative estrogen and progestin trial came out, but they reported that in their large sample of women, about half of them were using menopausal hormones, and they were able to look at the relationship of that hormone use to non-use in this large population, and they confirmed much epidemiological literature that came before that the hormone users as a group had about 66% higher rates of breast cancer, but that when you broke it out by estrogen only, you had a much lower risk than if you had estrogen and progestin. So for estrogen and progestin, the risk was twofold. And that was significantly more than estrogen only. Now, the curious point I want to make here is that the observational literature up to this point was pretty much suggesting that this estrogen, this increase of breast cancer with estrogen was specific to lean women and not seen in obese women and overweight women. So that's an important point to remember as I take you through the Women's Health Initiative. Now, the Women's Health Initiative was a very large study that had multiple trials. I'm only going to focus on the hormone trial. And this is a study of women who were 50 to 79 when they started, followed over a long period of time, conducted across the country at 40 clinical centers. And we have been continuing to follow the women ever since. And to just give you the design of the study, in the hormone trial, the first question was, does a woman have a uterus or not? Because that basically put her into one of two different trials. So the issue is not that we had the same population pool, but based on hormone use, you would either be, based on hysterectomy status, you would either be in the estrogen and progestin trial. If you had a uterus, it was still believed very strongly and still is that progestin is important to prevent endometrial cancer, and so that's added with estrogen. And in the case of a woman who's had a hysterectomy, there's no need for the progestin, and so that's an estrogen-only design. So what you see is that these are very large trials. The estrogen and progestin trial, which I'll call E plus P, was 16,608 women, randomly assigned to either conjugated equine estrogen, so these estrogens derived from horses, or placebo. And by the way, Premarin, which this estrogen, is still the most widely used estrogen for hormone therapy in the country today. Or they were put in the estrogen-only trial, which was just the estrogen. Oh, and the medroxyprogesterone acetate was the progestin. It was given every day through the study. So essentially, it was two trials, and people often don't get that clear. There are two very different populations in these trials. One population are women with hysterectomy, and there are different reasons that women get hysterectomy that really does make them quite different from women who have their uterus. The main outcome was heart disease, but breast cancer was always seen as the most important adverse outcome, potentially adverse outcome, and so it was an important secondary outcome, as were colorectal cancer and uterine cancer, if you had a uterus, and then other cardiovascular outcomes and hip fractures. Again, very large studies. The estrogen-only study was nearly 11,000 women. Originally planned to go 8.5 years, but because of risk-benefit analyses, they were both stopped short, particularly E plus P. So to just give you a schematic of the hypotheses, if you take the fact that we're trying to look at risk and benefits, I'm starting off with a scale here, and we had expected benefit from the observational literature for coronary heart disease, and that expected benefit was so high that the expectation was that we could handle the risk, the anticipated risk for breast cancer. In the middle, there is stroke because the reality is the observational literature wasn't very clear on what was going on with stroke and heart disease and hormones. It was bouncing back and forth in the literature. On the other side of benefit, we did actually expect to see benefit for fractures, reduced hip fractures, and we did expect to see harm for blood clots based on largely the oral contraceptive literature as opposed to the menopausal literature. And so to just jump to the chase, the estrogen and progestin trial, which is different then from the estrogen trial, had early observation, much earlier than anticipated, of breast cancer risk. And this was a priori stopping point, but it wouldn't have stopped the trial. Oh, I guess I need to tell you. The way that this balance was set up is neither of these risks or benefits would stop this trial unless they were consistent with an overall picture in the direction of benefit or harm. So what you see at the bottom, this global index, is building into the model every other outcome that a woman is getting. So that, for instance, if there are a lot more breast cancers occurring before you got the benefit to heart disease, that could stop the trial. But as long as the balance was still, it looks like, you know, overall, you put this into the woman and there's all kinds of things that can happen with the hormones. Overall, she didn't look worse off or better off. The trial would continue. So what happened first was the breast cancer flag went up on the estrogen and progestin trial. That would not have stopped the trial because by that time there was, in fact, enough benefit with respect to fewer hip fractures and fewer colorectal cancers that would have balanced and kept the balance intact. But the problem was all the cardiovascular hypotheses were wrong, and we actually ended up with cardiovascular risk and breast cancer risk, and together that sunk the ship and the study was stopped. Now, an interesting point is a lot of press came out. People were really surprised about this. But then immediately people started asking about, well, how does this relate to menopause? These are older women. These women are on average 63 years of age. And I just want to make the point that, in fact, an average doesn't give you the full story, and it's really important to look at the full story. In the Women's Health Initiative, we had goals for ages. We actually cut the study off to younger women when we had met our goals for the 50 to 59 group. But just to point out, nearly a third of this trial were women that we would consider in the menopausal range, early postmenopause at the worst, and that this is the largest study ever done on a menopausal age cohort. So that was the point, and this is true of both the estrogen-only and the estrogen and progestin trial. So the next point is the estrogen-only trial marched along. We tried to convince the women they should stay in the study. I will say a lot of women were coming off their study pills because that was a bit scary, and we've built that all into the intention-to-treat model, sensitivity analyses, which look at who's taking it. And the most important point on this slide before I put any data on is that we had no increase in breast cancer at the time that this study was stopped. There was no signal whatsoever of a problem with breast cancer with estrogen only. And we also had no effect on cardiovascular disease and nothing on colorectal cancer. What stopped the trial was the fact that just as we had seen in the estrogen and progestin trial, there was this increased risk of stroke. And even though there was a balance in terms of fewer hip fractures, the National Heart, Lung, Blood Institute said, we just can't continue a study that is showing this increase in stroke. We have other drugs for bones. Let's focus on that. So to just kind of summarize these two trials, they were very consistent in showing no benefit to heart disease, which is really where the big marketing was going, and showing harm for stroke and blood clots, and in the case of the estrogen and progestin, early harm for cardiovascular disease. Both studies were clear that these hormones are great for fractures. We had a sub-study of dementia that showed that for older women, they were bad, that basically we had double probable dementia occurring in those women. It wasn't just vascular dementia, as many people thought, because of the stroke issue. In terms of what was different was the breast cancer. And that still is a very interesting story. clearly increase in the estrogen and progestin trial, and no increase at the time that we stopped the trial. Colorectal cancer also differed in the two trials, so clearly this estrogen and progestin in that cohort differed from estrogen only in the women with hysterectomy in terms of its risk-benefit analysis. So that the global index, which was this overall picture, was clearly one of harm for the group of women that were in the estrogen and progestin trial, and a rather neutral finding for estrogen only. So what's one possible explanation? And there are many, but one that I think is worth talking about is coming back to the epidemiological literature that was saying that the estrogen-only harm was only seen in lean women in these other trials, or predominantly that was kind of the weight of the data. And when you look at these two trial cohorts, it turns out that a cohort of women with hysterectomy is a more obese cohort. And maybe even their obesity was one of the reasons they got hysterectomy, because it does cause bleeding because of unopposed estrogen. So it actually is one of the things that might determine a woman getting a hysterectomy. But the important thing is, by and large, the estrogen-only trial was a trial not of lean women, but of women who were actually obese. And that may be something that we really have to keep remembering. It isn't just estrogen and progestin versus estrogen. That said, I do want to point out that when we look at the cumulative incidence of breast cancers rising here, what you see is that in the red is the active estrogen and progestin group compared to the placebo in blue. And you can see that between years 1 and 3, there are actually fewer breast cancers diagnosed in the estrogen and progestin trial for the active treatment. And then they came out of the woodwork. And they really didn't come out of the woodwork. They came out of the dense breast tissue. Basically, what we learned is that mammography is not as good if you have dense breasts, which is another consequence of estrogen and progestin. And so the tumors were not being picked up until they were, in fact, larger and had spread to more lymph nodes. And we actually have data that, when we followed the trial, that there was evidence that the women who had been assigned to these active estrogen and progestin pills were at higher risk for death and mortality because it was more advanced breast cancer. Now, we actually stopped the trial, got women off the hormones, and what you're seeing is after the intervention, we continue to follow them. And we did continue to see more breast cancers emerging for a period of time. Probably those tumors had been there and we couldn't detect them because the mammography is not as good, is not as sensitive if you have denser breasts. But as the breast tissue reduced its density, we started to be able to pick up those tumors. And this complicated slide basically is showing you analysis where we actually did time-dependent breast cancer rates. And on the upper panel in the clinical trial, you see during the intervention this very steep, steady rise of breast cancers. And then when they stopped the intervention, a really nice decline in breast cancers. And I'll just let you know, we also had our own observational study in the WHI. And what you can see from that curve is that you probably can't read the numbers, but essentially women who on their own were taking estrogen and progestin compared to women who on their own were not, had a 2-fold higher increase in breast cancer, just like the Million Women study. And what you may not be able to see at the bottom of that is that when the Women's Health Initiative news came out, women came off their hormones at a pretty high rate, not only in WHI, by the way, in the whole country. I'll show you that next. And as they came off, we were actually able to see in our follow-up of these women this drop in the breast cancer rates in our observational trials. So the women who were coming off, their rates of breast cancer were coming down. And to just let you see, this actually was shown in the whole country. So this is actually giving you the estrogen and progestin data for hormone use in the whole country over this period of time. And you can see the reaction of the population to the WHI 2002 news, and then continued reaction when the estrogen-only trial came out. And the really interesting issue is that from the SEER data, based on breast cancer, you can actually see this decrease across the entire country in breast cancer as women were coming off those hormones. Very specific to the estrogen receptor positive tumors, really nothing with estrogen receptor negative tumors. So this is really observational literature to support the strong clinical trial findings. And to kind of bring this to conclusion, the estrogen-only trial I mentioned had not increased breast cancer. If you actually look at the cumulative incidence of the breast cancer diagnoses in that trial, the blue is placebo, the red is estrogen-only. What you can see is that throughout the entire trial, we saw fewer breast cancers, and we did not see denser breasts in the estrogen-only group. So the estrogen and progestin, we demonstrated there were denser breasts. This had very minimal effect on breast density. And even when the women stopped, we continued seeing this difference, so that by the time we actually looked at the whole period of observation on hormones, off hormones, in the estrogen-only group, which again I'll point out was a more obese population, in every age group, we did not see an increase. We actually saw this is quite significant for each age group, but a consistent story across the age group. And so I'm just going to end by saying, what are our current recommendations for menopausal hormone therapy? The recommendations are not to use these for chronic disease prevention. The recommendations are still for menopausal hormones, just as they were back in 1942, I'm sorry, for menopausal symptoms, moderate to severe symptoms, but using the lowest dose that's effective for the shortest time that's effective. We don't talk about go on it for the rest of your life. Also for vulvar vaginal symptoms, so dryness, problems with intercourse. There we would recommend, if that's your main concern, topical vaginal products, topical estrogens could be used. And finally, for preventing osteoporosis, preventing bone loss, if you are concerned about that issue, but only after trying the other choices and starting out with low dose. So these are the three current FDA indications for using menopausal hormones, and we no longer encourage women to go on it to prevent heart disease, dementia, or even bone loss, really, because we talk about other issues. Thank you.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.